The Cryptic Commander.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Cryptic Commander. We are your hosts. I'm John Nose.
I am MTG Peddler.
I'm Sloppy.
And this week, very special guest, MTG artist RK Post. RK, how's it going today?
It's not too bad. Actually, it's a little sunny outside, which is kind of crazy for the Pacific Northwest, but hey, I'll take it.
I always say an okay day at home is better than a bad day at work.
Well, a home is work.
That kind of cancels my point then. But, you know, yeah, it's the thought that matters. It's the thought that matters.
Yes. Well, Sloppy, I don't know what the weather like is in Canada, but I'm in the Midwest in the United States, and it's horrible over here.
Yeah, it's quite windy where I am as well.
It's a chilly 70 degrees here in New Jersey. And I still have a little bit of light. I can actually still see outside, which is nice.
It's bright and sunny here.
Proudly sponsored by NorthValleyGames.com, where you can go over to NorthValleyGames.com, and they've got great prices on their singles and sealed product. And listeners, don't forget, you have a promo code TCC2021. You can use at checkout and save 10% off your order. They started a new program where they're buying your cards. If you use the same code, they'll give you an extra 10% cash, and also helps kick back and help the podcast. Right into card of the week.
So this week we've got a Boros Charm. It is an instant for a red and a white, and it's got three modes, and you can choose one of them. So you can have Boros Charm deals 4 damage to target player or planeswalker. Permanents you control gain indestructible until end of turn, or target creature gains double strike until end of turn. What do we think about this card, guys?
Boros Charm, to me, is very, very similar to basically all modal cards that have ever existed. The sum of its parts is not good, but when you have the flexibility to choose a mode when you have three situational modes, if it was just Boros Charm deals 4 damage to target player or just target creature gains double strike, it would be awful. No one would ever play it. But the idea of the flexibility of it's situational, but it covers three different situations, it makes it a much stronger card. And it's also an instant, too. So, you know, you can use this in response to stuff. It's not like it's a sorcery or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of it. I like the modal cards like that because you get a lot of value out of them, even though the sum of its parts are not great.
Yeah, I've definitely had games go where gaining double strength was just enough to push me over the edge. And then the next game, playing it and having all my permanents gain indestructible helped protect me from some hate my opponents was throwing. So I totally agree with you. I love the flexibility of this card.
Yeah, you guys said it right there. It's a modal card. For just two, you know, it's a mini command.
It really is. It's a mini command, basically, and it's cheap, which is nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you don't have to like worry about, like, you know, because, and also it's a good card early and it's a good card late. You know what I mean? Like I don't think you want to be top decking a Boros Charm, but you know, if you draw into it, like okay, you know, maybe if you already have a board state, it could help you get there.
Yeah, definitely.
RK, do you play games at all?
Outside of maybe Pokemon Go, not really. And that sucks up enough time as it is. And if I played more things, I would do less things that are probably more important to actually accomplish.
I understand what you're talking about. I feel sometimes when I play Magic the Gathering Arena, I could be doing something else more productive, you know?
Yes.
I was going to say, I think my wife wishes I had more of your mindset.
Yeah, sometimes it can be just too much. I mean, there was a time like early in my life and career where I did play a lot more like a variety of games, and yeah, they just sucked up so much time that I had to just stop and say, nope, kind of back a bit.
It's all about priorities.
Yeah, I take it way too seriously.
I think most gamers do, honestly, no matter what your format is, if it's cards, if it's computers, if it's console. I think once you get into a game, if you're a gamer, it's like, yeah, I need to do this now.
Yeah, and I just go all in.
Now, mm-hmm. RK, I'm sure you're well aware of some of the prices on some of these cards, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially like when I get Artist Pros, I actually have to do some research on what some of the card values are so I can charge appropriately for the proofs. But I'm totally aware of the market and the nuances of it.
Okay, because you might be interested in hearing this next section called Movers and Shakers.
All right, so coming in at the bottom three this week, we have Young Pyromancer, which is staying flat at $5. And that is the time shifted art. And then also time shifted, Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker is staying strong, very flat at $14.81. And time shifted True Name Nemesis is $9.98. So, and it's staying steady as well. So there hasn't been too much movement in the down category. But now let's talk about cards on the rise. Coming in at number three, we have Kaya's Guile, up 167% to $7.95. And that is, again, another modal card, actually. It's choose two. Each opponent sacrifices a creature. Exile all cards from each opponent's graveyard. Create a 1-1 white-black spirit creature token with flying, or you gain 4 life, and it has Entwine for 3 colorless. Mm-hmm. And moving on to number 2, we have Fable of Wolf and Owl coming from Eventide, up 485% to $24.87. So that card is that card's doing something. It was flat like in like that $4 or $5 range since the invention of time, basically. And now all of a sudden it is just blowing up. Anyone have any thoughts on that? Why that's going
Adrix and Nev.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sloppy's on top of it. Short and sweet, I like it. And coming in this week at the number one spot, we have Tempt with Reflections. It's sitting at $14.94, which is a 579% increase. And this is, again, one of those cards that was hovering. This one was like a $2 card for the longest time.
It's now what?
It is now $14.94. Let me read the card real fast. So it's 3 generic and a blue. Sorcery speed. And it says, Tempting Offer. Choose target creature you control. Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. Each opponent may put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. For each opponent who does, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature.
Oh, so that's like my Tempted Discovery, where they do that with the lands.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Okay. That goes in my deck, yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely on the move. Like I said, that and the second, what was it called already? I forgot. Fable of Wolf and Owl. They have skyrocketed this past week.
I feel like they're both for the same reason as well. They both have stuff to do with tokens, which Adrix and Nev is very, very heavy in.
It makes sense, too, because they're both Simic colored also.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for RK. RK, we had a guest about maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago. He was our first Magic the Gathering artist guest, Solomon A. Young. And we asked him a question. Did you approach Magic or did Magic approach you? How did that happen?
Well, for me, I have like the weirdest story of them all. Maybe only one or two other artists can actually sort of replicate the same thing. So I did approach them at some point with a portfolio at Gen Con years ago and never heard anything back. But in the meantime, I got a job with TSR doing D&D stuff. I was a staff artist, and then Wizards came along. They bought the company, and then I started doing Magic art around that time. I was part of the company.
Right.
So Todd Lockwood can easily say the same thing as well. So there you go.
Actually, an interesting story. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
I've said it on the podcast before. My brother was a pen pal to Gary Gygax. I'm sure you don't know who that is, right?
Absolutely.
And I was,
Gary was out of the company when I came on board.
Sure.
But I'm still friends with the family.
Nice, man. Yeah. I was jealous of my brother, just him being a pen pal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a piece of history right there.
I know. And you're talking about a piece of history. I mean, right now on this podcast, you were interested in making art for Magic. You approached him to Gen Con. Yes. Then you worked with TSR. Which, you know, and then they buy the company, right? And they're like, okay, we own Dungeons & Dragons now and stuff. And then they're like, wait, this guy works there. He's a good artist. And he's like, well, you know, I approached you guys earlier.
Well, I don't think I really brought that up. I think I called the, it was Matt Wilson who was the art director at the time. I called him up and then asked, you know, hey, we work together and I'm interested in some magic art. Would it be possible to do some? And he said, sure. And then I think Jesper Mirfors is also an art director at the time. And then he also gave me some work around the same time as well. But no, that was 22 years ago, 23 years ago, something like that. I don't know. Long time ago.
Peddler, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, he has a very impressive, RK has a very impressive body of work. What is it, like 40, 50 cards you've done over the years?
It's between 100 and 200.
Oh, wow. Oh, maybe. Oh, wait. It says page, the website I'm on says page one of two. I didn't even see page two. Oh, that's funny. That is quite impressive. That's a lot of cards.
And I'll just say that I'm not done. So there you go.
Good for you, man. Keep them coming. Yeah. I love them. I'm checking them out. I love them. I'm gonna be bothering you for one of those artist proofs of the mountain.
They're long gone.
Oh no!
They never reprinted it either, so it's like, I'm kind of stuck. Oh,
my heart.
Yeah, they're out there somewhere. I'm sure if you do a long and steady search, you'll come across one. I know people were looking for like avatar proofs, and there's one guy who actually found all five like recently.
Wow. That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. You're telling me, especially all five prophecy ones.
We're going to go to Magic the Gathering Arena updates real quick. We have April 2nd to April 16th, Quick Draft, Throne of Eldraine. April 2nd to April 15th, Arena Cube Draft is still going on. Turbo Draft, April 10th through April 15th. And then last but not least, Premier Draft Strixhaven, April 15th. To July 15th. I'm excited for that one. Are you guys
excited? Oh, I'm very, very excited for that. I cannot wait to draft with Strixhaven. It looks like a blast to draft.
Slothy, you've got something that's interesting. What do you got?
So all five of the Commander 21 pre-cons have been spoiled, and I don't know if you guys have seen these, but I am very excited. So like the first one that they previewed was the Lorehold Legacies deck, which is a red-white deck. And it's commanded by Osgir the Reconstructor, who is probably maybe the most excited I've been for a red-white commander ever.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
Well, they did come out and say that they're going to change white, right?
Yeah. But he is a 4/4 legendary creature giant artificer for 2 a red and a white with vigilance. And he has tap 1 generic and sack an artifact. Target creature control gets +2/+0 until end of turn. And he's also got tap X and then tap Osgear to exile an artifact card with mana value X from your graveyard. Create 2 tokens that are copies of the exiled card. Activate only as a sorcery. And this deck has got some heavy hitters in the artifact column. It's got like Triplicate Titan, Bosch Iron Golem, Mirror Battlesphere.
Soul Ring in there.
Well, of course it does. It's got Mikasynth Wellspring. Just a whole bunch. I'm very, very, very giddy about this one.
Yeah, I'm surprised Austin's not on the show today. He's going to miss out here in Mirror Battlesphere.
It's got Sun Titan in there, too.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Get that little bit of extra value.
I like Sun Titan. Did anybody see the new product they have, the world's smallest? They have another one out, guys. Little miniature Magic the Gathering decks.
Was that the Johnny versus Bolas one?
Yeah, it's a Johnny Vengeance, which is Boros, versus Nicol Bolas.
Do they have basic lands in that? Do I need to add those to my collection now?
Peddler, if you want the small, tiny, basic lands, they make them. And they got the real magic back and everything, dude. So you're going to want to collect those. You're a basic
land. Yeah, I'm going to need those. That's unfortunate. I don't even know how I'm going to display those.
and Peddler, man, we've got somebody that did artwork on a basic land. How excited are you?
Are you kidding me? You know I'm excited. that was like the first card I saw. I was like, RK did a mountain in Shadowmoor. I was like, oh my God.
Mountain and Swamp.
I'm already excited.
Mountain and Swamp.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can make a really crappy deck out of my cards. Only black red.
This website I'm on must not have your entire body of work on all the cards, because I didn't even see the swamp.
Yeah, there's a swamp hiding in there somewhere too.
It's funny cool. You say that, RK, because we asked Solomon A. Young. We said, hey, have you ever played with any of your cards? He said, yes, I have. I said, okay, what does it feel like when you play one of your cards that you did the artwork for? He's like, oh man, it's super cool. you know. So have you ever tried Magic the Gathering?
Yeah, way back when. I was playing, what was it, like a 7th edition starter deck or something. It had a Thorn Elemental in it. Okay. And it was in my deck, and I actually won. And I figured that was a good place to stop. it would never get any better than that. But, you know, it's really cool when you play with something with your art on it. And they actually fare pretty well. Then it's even better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, man. You definitely hope that your artwork doesn't go on a common, you know?
Well, I've had a lot. Oh, dude, trust me, I've had a lot of bad cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's even worse when they keep reprinting that same bad card over and over again. This is a filler card.
Wasn't that Stormcrow? Which one is it?
What?
There's a joke in the community, Stormcrow. So there's a flying, 2-1 or 1-2 for 2? And it's a real horrible card, and everybody just makes a joke about it. Like, oh, you should use Stormcrow, you know?
But, they put that in one of the undecks, didn't they?
I don't think so. It's really
No, I believe there is a Stormcrow in the undeck, actually.
Yeah.
Is there really? Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, Arcane knows more than me. Look at that.
Just slightly. About one thing. There you go. It's okay.
Now, if anybody that's listening to the podcast right now, this is the first time they're hearing about you, how can they get a hold of you? Or do you have any projects going on? Or
I'm always plenty busy. But if you just go to arcadepost.net, usually all my links and stuff and things are there to the Insta, the Facebook, and Twitter, and what have you. And there's also a Patreon, arcadepost. Patreon.com/arcadepost.
Okay.
That is mostly it. If you go to arcadepost.net or you just Google search my name, it's the first thing, it'll come right up and it'll link you to pretty much everything right there.
Well, guys, while we do have RK here, before we go into our last subject, is there any questions you have for him or anything?
I have a question. Are we going to go over these other 4 commander decks?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing.
I thought you did.
I'm looking at the set list on these things. These things are insane.
They are really, really good.
Yeah.
You apologize. I thought you did. Go ahead.
That's all good. The second commander deck is the Prismari performance deck. Which is Izzet Colors, more commonly known as. But the commander is Zafi Thunder Conductor, and I'm not going to make fun of the name. We've already done that. There is a mistake on the card, but we're not going to touch on that again.
Does RK know about it?
No.
Does he?
Let's fill him in. Let's fill him in. Quick, hold on. So, RK, you're going to love this, RK. Hold on.
All right.
Look up this card. This card. It's called, what is it called, Slothy?
Zafi, Zaffai.
Okay.
Thunder Conductor.
Thunder Conductor.
Yeah, just read that guy top to bottom.
Gotcha. Can you cast a copy of an instant or sorcery spell, scry 1. That spell's mana value is 5 or greater. Create a 4/4 blue and red elemental creature token. If that spell's mana value is 10 or greater, Zafi? Okay. Thunder Collector deals 10 damage to an opponent. I must have missed it.
Yeah, you can't activate the last ability because it says the Thunder Collector. The card is called Thunder Conductor.
Oh, God.
That's not the only mistake they made, though. They also came out and publicly said in the historical archive cards with the Japanese artwork, they've got 2 cards, 2 blue cards, I believe it is, that the artwork was accidentally swapped. So when it comes to Magic the Gathering Arena, they're going to go ahead and keep the digital versions of the same ones in the real world. They said all the collector's versions, they couldn't catch it in time. So those are the same thing. Japanese versions, UK versions, everything, guys.
Extra collectible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so they are making some mistakes, but I know we're all human, right?
People do love mistakes, though.
I do love that conductor. Well, go ahead, Slough. I just thought RK would get a chuckle out of that.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
But Zafi is actually, it's also a pretty interesting deck. It's got a lot of, obviously, instant and sorcery shenanigans, which I really like. It's got like a dual caster mage in there. One card I'm not too fond of in there is Inferno Project. So that's a 0/0 for 6 and a red. It's an elemental with trample. An Inferno Project enters the battlefield with X++1 counters on it, where X is the total mana value of instant sorceries in your graveyard. Just to me, that seems like it's a bit too situational.
And there's also not that many instants and sorceries in the deck. There's only 16 total.
There's 29.
29? Oh, gotcha. I see. I'm looking at others now. I got it.
Slow down there, peddler.
I'm scrolling. I'm on it.
Well, if it's not your place, pal, walk on. You know.
Oh, I'm still gonna play it and have a ton of fun with it. But next up, we've got the Quantum Quandrix deck, and this one is led by a card that I mentioned a bit ago. This is a Simic Colors deck, and it's got Adrix and Nev twin casters as the commander. It is a 2/2 legendary creature, Merfolk Wizard, for 2, a green and a blue, and it's got Ward 2. And Ward is any mechanic where whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, counter it unless that player pays 2. And Adrix and Nev has an insane ability of if one or more tokens will be created under your control, twice that many of those tokens are created instead.
I like it already.
And yeah, this is very, very, very powerful. But we've got things like Zimone, Quandrix Prodigy, which is a card that I'm quite fond of. It's a 1/2 legendary creature human wizard for a green and blue. Tap 1 and tap Zimone and you may put a land from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. Or you can tap 4 and tap Zimone to draw a card. If you control 8 or more lands, draw 2 cards instead. I don't know. I just really like how that one works.
Yeah, I'm looking at the deck list. I'm like less impressed with the deck list than I am the commander. I think it's a really cool commander card.
I think that there's a lot of really crazy things you can do with Desolation Twin in this deck.
Well, going back on what Peddler said, I understand where you're coming from. A very powerful commander and the rest of the deck's not so good. I think they got to do a balancing act. You know, if the commander's so-so, then they'll put a few good cards in the deck somewhere. But if the commander's very powerful like that, they kind of got to balance it out. You know,
I don't know. That Lorehold commander was sick, and there were some pretty sick cards in there, too.
Yeah.
In the body of the deck itself. It's also it's probably worth reiterating that Ward is going to be the new evergreen keyword. So we will be seeing Ward for a lot and for a long time to come now.
And that's the Quandrix one, right?
Correct. Yeah. Get used to seeing Ward on cards.
Yeah.
So next up is the Silver Quill Statement deck. So Silver Quill is Orzhov Colors, black and white. And it is led by Brina the Demigouge. I think I pronounced that right. It is a 1/3 legendary creature, Burnt Warlock, for 1, a white and a black, and it's got flying. And whenever a player attacks one of your opponents, if that opponent has more life than another of your opponents, that attacking player draws a card, and you put 2 +1/+1 counters on a creature you control. So what do you think about this one?
I like Orzhov.
Yeah.
But black-white is like my least favorite color pairing.
It's your least favorite?
Mm-hmm. Not a fan of black. I'm not a fan of white in general. I like if I'm drafting and I'm forced into white and black or white in anything, I'll play it. But as a whole, I try to avoid white. It's not a fan. Not a fan of the style. I'm more of a blue player.
RK, did you have any colors that you wanted to play with? I mean, I think the Thorn Elemental was green, right, or something?
Green. Yeah. Green. I don't know. I was always drawn to black, but.
So you were drawn to black?
Yeah, I don't know. That's mono black. Yeah. It seems like my speed. <Nice.
laughs> Alrighty, and then the final deck that was revealed is the Witherbloom Witchcraft deck. And I believe this was just previewed today. It is Golgari colors, so green and black. And it is led by Willowdusk Essence Seer. Willowdusk is a 3/3 legendary creature, Dryad Druid. For 1, a black and green, it's got tap 1 and tap Willowdusk. To choose another target creature, put a number of 1/1 counters on it equal to the amount of life that you gained this turn or the amount of life you've lost this turn, whichever is greater. Activate only as a sorcery. So this just seems like Golgari doing Golgari things.
Yeah, that seems like it can get really silly.
Yeah.
What were they calling it again? Witherbloom?
Witherbloom, yes.
It sounds Golgari to me.
Yeah.
I'm just reading over the deck list. Deck list, see what stands out.
Alhamrat's Archive is in this deck.
I can only imagine the very new beginning players playing this too. They're like, oh yeah, Witherbloom. And then me later on in life, I'm like, Witherbloom? What? You know?
It's interesting because it feeds to the newer players. Like if you start playing within like the next couple years after Strixhaven's release, you're probably going to call it green black, you know, Witherbloom, because this is what you're used to hearing.
Right.
Where what is it? It's Golgari, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I call it green black because I played before the guild, so it's like it's just green black to me.
Yeah,
it's interesting because I'm an old hat, so I'm like green black. The new people are like Golgari, and then or the mid range people are Golgari, and then like the newer people are going to be Witherbloom.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That is those are the five spoiled commander decks.
I'd say pretty solid. No,
yeah, I'd say overall it's a pretty decent set of decks there. I'm very excited to play all of them, which I can't say that I have been for every commander set. So that's really awesome.
And also, like, I always feel like, you know, anything pre-constructed is generally going to be pretty, you know, pretty weak. It's how it seems.
Yeah,
like, you know,
that's how I feel too.
But
yeah.
But these aren't bad. Like, I'm like just glancing over the deck list. Like, these aren't bad at all.
Yeah, no.
I do think that Wizards knows what we as consumers think. You know, like, oh, no, man, that's not for me. That's for new people, you know? And we pass those up, right? Because we know what we're going for.
Yeah.
And I think Wizards has caught on to that, and they're trying to improve it slowly but surely and not to go over a cap on a certain level, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like they're just slowly building up their power level to where, like, back in the day, it was pretty weak. You pretty much had to take the deck apart and rebuild it. But now you can almost just take out a couple cards, throw a couple in, and sit down and play.
RK, are you familiar with a term called power creep? Probably not, right?
I am. Everything just kind of gets bigger and bigger over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have to keep up with it.
So are you familiar with the commander format?
Top line, yes.
Okay. And you know they made a card called Jeweled Lotus?
Jeweled Lotus, yeah. Yeah, I am aware of that one, yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man.
it's a brilliant marketing tactic.
Yeah,
everyone, yeah. Even non-Magic players, I'm assuming, have heard of a Black Lotus. Everyone knows what it is. So they're like, oh, we'll just make a Black Lotus for Commander. Everyone seems to like Commander. So let's just make a Black Lotus that's strictly for Commander. It's not a Black Lotus, but, you know, it does the same thing.
We can't reflect that, obviously.
Yeah, but it does almost the identical thing, only it targets your Commander. As you can only cast your Commander spell with it, but it's, you know, put it down, sack it for three colors, or three single colors in your Commander's identity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it was like, yeah, let's make a Black Lotus for Commander. And guess what happened? Commander Legends sold like crazy because of it.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, with most, even a lot of non-Magic players would know about Black Lotus. Another thing that helped that is one just sold for, what was it, like $500,000 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
And it gets shared to you, like, repeatedly, too.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't be aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Hey, you like that Magic the Gathering? Here, check this out.
Or when the Antiques Roadshow came across somebody with a folder of Magic the Gathering cards, you know?
And I've seen that one several times.
Yeah, yeah. I've got friends who are like, you're into this, man. And I'm like,
yeah, check this out.
You're only the 300th person that pointed it out today, you know?
Pretty much, yeah.
We're going to go into our last section here on the podcast called Beginner's Corner. And we'll start with Peddler. But the question this week on so it's a question. For Beginner's Corner, how do you sort your cards? And this is a big question, so I thought it'd be perfect for Beginner's Corner. And Peddler, we're going to start with you. And I know you got basic lands, so
I'm going to have probably the most unorthodox and unpopular way I sort my cards.
Let me guess, Wooburg.
No, I don't even use Wooburg, by the way. I use it in alphabetical because it makes most sense.
Okay.
When I'm actually arranging my cards, I put them in value categories. I am MTG Peddler. So those who don't know, anything I open up on my channel is to resell in order to get more sealed product for the next. And I sell my stuff to my singles to get dual lands and basic lands for my collection. So I look at cards $10 plus, 5 to 10, and 5 and under. So my $10 plus cards go straight into top loaders, and they are instantly put on eBay.
I can easily see you, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I can easily see
good.
I can easily see you buying out all the dual lands that are on the market in the future, because this is your philosophy. I buy this, I flip this, I get money and put all that extra money and buy dual lands. And the guy's not lying, RK, okay? He takes all his extra money and he buys dual lands with it. So I'm thinking when he exhausts all those resources, right? You know, with all the dot-coms and everything, right? What's going to happen, man? Peddler's going to be like, I've got millions of dollars, and I went.
It's funny too, because my buddy says I'm responsible for every single price increase in the land collection area. Because when I bought my Underground Sea, I got my Underground Sea at $600, and then like 2 months later, it jumped up to $1,200. And same thing with my Arabian Nights Mountain. I bought my Arabian Nights Mountain at like, I think it was $90, and it's like going for $250 now. And so he's calling me. He's like, yo, what are you buying? I need to buy it before it goes up.
Right.
So I have a wacky question. Underground Sea. Sure. From what I've heard, there are more signed than unsigned.
Probably. Yes. Because when you get something that's rare like that, and you're this deep in the game like we are, you want to go get that stuff signed by somebody like you, right? And there's going to be a lot of people out there. You've been to Gen Cons and you've been on YouTube. I've seen you on YouTube where you've been to conventions signing stuff.
So, right.
You know what?
But I know Rob is like a signing beast. So, so here's the question:
yeah.
Which is more desired, the signed or the unsigned?
The signed. The signs are more desired. I can answer that real quick because there's actually a Facebook group designed just for signed cards.
And I can tell you, I'm polar opposite. I do not want
signed cards. There you go. Cards.
Yeah, I'm kind of this one.
Okay.
Don't want them. I actually, and that's partially true. For cards, I'm looking as an investment. Like, I'm going to hold on to these and see where my value goes. And, like, whenever I feel like cashing out, I'll have these, you know, high-end cards to have. Those I want pristine as they were intended as Magic cards. Uh-huh. In my personal collection, which is one of every basic land ever printed, I love having signed lands in that. Absolutely love it.
It's a good thing that he brought that question up. I went to the Facebook group and I asked these guys, how much does this pacifism cost or worth when the artist signed it? They're like, well, normally it's worth the pacifism plus a couple bucks, but this guy doesn't sign cards anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that shot way up.
Okay. And then you have cards, say like Glenn Angus and Chris Rush. They're no longer with us.
Correct.
Right.
And they skyrocket, man, because no way you're going to even go out of your way to get a signature, you know?
Yeah. So,
in my opinion, and this is everybody's got their own opinion, just like, you know, Peddler and stuff, the signed cards are worth more money. They're going to start as a base of what the card's worth,
mm-hmm.
and then you add on the value depending on the artist. I can see how people say, well, this defaces the card, it's going to make it worth less. But in actuality, man, it's a collectible game. It's a game that people, you know.
It is. Maybe two things to add. One is there's an experience to getting a card signed.
Yes.
And it say you're picking up a pre-signed card, you don't have that experience. You just have a card with a signature on it.
Correct.
And then the other one is graded cards. Signing the outside of the grading, I think, solves both problems right there.
I agree with that, too.
But, yeah, I mean, graded cards aren't really playable. I mean, unless you're going to have a deck of graded cards.
Well, that's what I'm going to do, actually. If everybody thinks I'm playing, I'm going to have such a big deck. It's going to be in the grade.
That's insane. The deck box, I want to see it.
Yeah. I'm going
to go. I will say this, too. I actually just got assigned John Avon land. One of my subscribers just sent me out of the blue. He sent it to my P.O. box, and it was awesome because John – but no offense to RK. John Avon is my favorite artist in the game. So I was very, very I was very shocked to have a signed John Avon card just – come in the mail that, you know, I didn't request. It just came. That was actually really cool.
I have
John's a hell of a nice guy, and he's British, and he doesn't get over to this side of the pond all that often, and well, obviously these days far less, and even before that he didn't get here really all that much either, and even in Britain he didn't sign that much. So to have a John Avon's on card is just amazing.
Oh, so cool.
You see what I mean? Yeah
But to get back to like the actual question, which is how I sort, so $10 an order over is in top loaders and instantly on eBay. $5 to $10 cards, I put them in a binder, and then I'll get to them as I go through my higher end cards to sell. And then $1 to $5, that all just goes to Card Kingdom, TCG, Troll and Toad, whoever's going to give me the best money for them so I can get more dual lands. And then all of my, like, you know, just, you know, commons and stuff, they get lovingly chucked into a shoebox. Which, like I said, I feel like my system is going to be the most unpopular, but that's just how I do.
Okay. Slothy, how do you sort your cards?
I am quite a bit more anal about it than Peddler is. I like to sort all my cards first by color. And then I sort them by card type. So land, like basic land or artifact land or whatever it is, creatures. And then I like to go up in CMC or mana value now. Yeah, just short and sweet. That's kind of how I've done it for years.
It makes it easy to find stuff too, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't like to do it, but I'm going to make RK last on this because I'm not sure if he does it or not. I sorted by alphabetical order, period.
I would probably do it the most unpopular way ever, and it would not make them very playable, by number. By set and by number.
That is so cool.
Huh.
That'd be so cool. The first time I come across anybody that does that, I'd be like, dude, give me a high five.
You just put them in a binder. No play sets, just one of each. Man, I got a full set.
I started doing that with Scars of Mirrodin. So I don't remember what year that was, but I remember having an idea back then. Yeah. What if I collect one card of everything in that one set, you know? So I started, I did that starting with Scars of Mirrodin. I've been doing it ever since, you know?
It doesn't make it playable, but I mean, you could find everything easily.
Yeah. No. They go for insane amount of money if you get like a complete set of one card from that set, you know, like,
yeah,
it goes for an insane amount of money, but
even common play set. Oh, even common play sets.
Yeah.
Like I was selling, Time Spiral Remastered common play sets times four for $50 on eBay. They sold really fast.
Yeah.
For that commons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I had the idea back then and I like the idea. I'm still going. It kind of reminds me of your idea with the basic lands. Well, that is going to do it for today's episode. I really do appreciate you coming on the episode, man. And I do apologize to the other co-hosts of jumping in here and there just to get RK's opinion on something.
That's fine.
At the beginning,
I talk too much anyway. I think everyone can agree to that.
Well, it's just I'm thinking in between the spots here. Well, RK is not going to be able to touch on that. He's not going to be able to touch on that. He's not going to be able to touch on that. Like, man, I'm going to have to just come through with questions here and there, you know. It's like, plus it's really cool that, you know, when I started playing this game in 1993, I was not even maybe a little teenager, guys, you know. Here I'm 41 now, and you know, to have somebody on this podcast of your stature, okay, it means a lot to me, and I'm sure to the other guys too. So
absolutely.
So when I say, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show, I mean it from the deepest part of my heart, man. I really do.
Well, thank you so much. And then hopefully next year we get back out there and I can actually see faces again.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what?
That would be something.
Yeah. Please.
Maybe they'll allow us to set up a podcast booth next to you signing or something, you know?
Yeah. I'm down.
Yeah. Definitely. All right, guys. Make sure to follow us over on Facebook, The Cryptic Commander. We have a YouTube channel, The Cryptic Commander. And as always, keep spell slinging.